regain most mornings of the summer the opportunity to get a peek inside into a very unique type of sefer. It's a cross between two different types of svarim. We're going to get to enjoy both elements. But Turetsky mentioned yesterday that there's a mysterious gemara at the end of Maseches Makos with a gematria that is Megala Tefach Mechasa Tzvachan. The gemara tells a little bit and leaves most of the story untold. The gemara tells Rav Shimloi, tells at the end of Maseches Makos, there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. The gemara has a Gzeirah Shava, is a gematria rather, Torah is 611 plus 2, is 613 mitzvahs. But the obvious question is, which are those 613 mitzvahs? The gemara does give various summaries that different Nevi'im gave. Ba David v'hemidon all this many. Ba Chavakuk v'hemidon achas. Knocking it down to 12 ideas, 7 ideas, 3 ideas. Micha has 3. Finally, Chavakuk has 1. And there the Gemara lists what those key ideas are. But the Gemara never tells us which are the 613 mitzvahs, which left a wide open field for several centuries, the middle of the period of the Gaonim, through the middle of the period of the Rishonim. For several centuries, some of our finest minds spent probably years of their lives trying to figure that out. What are the 613 mitzvahs? The Bahag, Balach Gadol's head is counted, Rav Sadia Gaon head is counted, the Ramban, and several others. And then, in that whole literature of Sefer HaMitzvahs, there's different Sefer HaMitzvahs have their own unique twist. The Sefer HaChinuch is unique in three key ways. Number one, it's anonymous. We know who wrote the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs. We know who wrote the Ramban Sasagas. We more or less know who the Bahag was, and we certainly know who Rav Sadia Gaon was. The Sefer HaChinuch is a mystery. For a long time, it was thought that it was written by the Ra'a, who was a Talmud of the Ramban, a contemporary of the Rashba. Nowadays, it's assumed that it was not the Ra'a, but it was some member of the Beis Medrash of the Ramban. A Talmud or a grand Talmud of the Ramban, someone from that school of learning in Sfarad. We don't know who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch. Number two uniqueness is that, unlike most of the Sefer HaMitzvahs that are organized somehow conceptually by topic, there are some Sefer Yireim organized by part of the body, different conceptual frameworks, the Sefer HaChinuch is organized by, very good, by Parshas HaShavua. And finally, and for our purposes most critically, he adds to just about every single mitzvah the following element. He has four pieces to his treatment of every mitzvah. Like any other Sefer HaMitzvah, he'll name the mitzvah and give you a sort of a thumbnail portrait of the mitzvah, tell you where it comes from in the Chumash. Almost all the Sefer HaMitzvahs do that. Like any other, like most of the other Sefer HaMitzvahs, he'll give you a rundown of some of the halachas. Sometimes he'll actually, as in the mitzvah we're about to see, but we're not going to see that part, actually spend some time going through some of the dinim. More often, he'll just raise the shilas and he'll tell you where to look. He'll say, if you want to know how you do this mitzvah, what sort of chet to use, like list off 8 shilas, the dinim of this mitzvah are mivuarim in such and such a paragraph, such and such a mesefta. So he'll give at least some sort of rundown on the halachas, and he'll close with giving you a sense of to whom it applies, like the specs of the mitzvah, the basic set. It applies to men, it applies to women, in Eretz Yisrael, out of Eretz Yisrael, what's the punishment if you violate, what does it look like if you violate. But like any other sefer mitzvah, he'll give you those three elements, the basic definition, the halachas, and the specs, the stats of the mitzvah. What he adds, which is unique, is he talks not only about the dinim, not only about the halachas of the mitzvah, what you're doing, but he also talks about the why, or maybe even more precisely, the where to. How does this mitzvah shape me? And he writes in the end of the Hakdama, he says, I don't think, he writes with Anava, he says, who am I to even write this Sefer HaMitzvah? He gives his whole background, he wrote it, this with incredible humility. You know, his kids, his son and his son's friends, when they were teenagers, would schmai around Shabbos afternoon. That's probably an old issue. They would just wander the streets and hang out and get into trouble Shabbos afternoon. Imagine the streets of Barcelona back in the days of the Ramban and the Rashba. They also just wasted. There were teenage Jewish teenagers wasting their time. One can imagine such a thing, hypothetically speaking, on a Shabbos afternoon. So he said, I wanted to give my son something to do. Many Jewish fathers and mothers have agonized over that. How my kids are spending their time on Shabbos afternoon. Few Jewish fathers solved the problem by saying, I'll write a sefer that will keep my son and his friends occupied. But that's what the Sefer HaChinuch did. He said, I wrote the sefer for my son and his friends, and maybe you'll like it also. So here it is. So what he does, and he writes there in the introduction, that who am I? I don't think that I'm gonna. I'm not writing kiddushim. I'm just quote. You think I know all the gemaras and all the Yerushalmis? I'm just, you know, borrowing things from the Rif and the Ramban. Okay, he was clearly a ganz fine Talmud Chacham. He did stick to the way the Ramban counts the mitzvahs, and the machlokes and what you count and what you don't count, what you lump or what you split. He does stick to the Rambam's enumeration. Clearly a massive Talmud Chacham in his own right. And then he writes, I'm going to try to also figure out, he says, it's beyond me, who can ever say that they know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah? Beyond us to say we got the complete answer, but I'm going to give my best guess of at least some of the, and he's always going to, almost always will say, Misha Rashi HaMitzvah. From among the roots of mitzvah, there are no doubt many, maybe infinite, but let me at least give you one or two that I think might be among the ideas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind. And specifically, listen carefully, he specifically focused on the following. He specifically focused on how doing any given mitzvah shapes my insights. How do my actions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell me to engage in the following action, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell me to avoid the following action, how is that supposed to shape me? HaKadosh Baruch Hu may have a lot in mind, but the Sefer Chinuch is focused specifically on how it shapes my attitudes and how it shapes my midos. There's some hashkafa, there's some midah, some aspect of emunah that's going to be enhanced, that's going to be polished, that's going to be cultivated through continuing to act in a certain way. And that's what he's going to help us tap into. So over the course of the summer, hopefully we will begin most mornings with a peek at the Sefer Chinuch, each day a different mitzvah, or sometimes even two if they're very short. And it'll hopefully help us accomplish several things. It'll get us thinking about important ideas, b'chlal. He's going to raise a wide variety of ideas to get us thinking. So it'll be, in a certain, in that sense, a morning machshava. It'll be a different type of machshava, say, than maybe you're used to. It's also going to get us thinking about that connection. So often we do what we're supposed to do. That's really a ganz feine madrega, that you talk to do what you're supposed to do. That's not easy. But we're ready to take it to the next level. Because a lot of times it's what the Navi refers to as mitzvah ha'nashim milumada. Baruch Hashem, we're good guys, we do the right thing. And we're in a routine, which is great. Far better to do good things out of routine than to not do good things. But at the same time, if it's just my hands and feet and mouth that are working on their own, but my brain is somewhere else. You know, Chanoch Teller tells the following sketch. Of a Jew who's, I don't know who went where on Friday, but a Jew is in Machne Yehuda, and he's checking out the fruit, and he's squeezing the lemons, and he's banging on the watermelons. Yeah, the guy's screaming, Avatiach. And then suddenly, he gets like a punch in the chest. And he's like, there's no one around there. He's looking around. Who did that? Bizarre. That's weird. Okay. So, whatever. Sort of strange. Whatever. He moves on. Then he gets to the vegetables. He's looking at the cucumbers, checking out some pickles, tomatoes. And suddenly, again, there's like a punch in his chest. He's like, look at it. There's no one around him. No one in front of him. No one behind him. Who punched him in the chest? Twice. Like that. And then he realizes... And then he realizes, exactly, and his mouth, the Yerushalmi even says, Yerushalmi, the Amoraim, Yerushalmi was written the same time as the Babli, the Amoraim, and Yerushalmi says we should have Hakaras HaTov to our spine that it knows to bow at Modim. Meaning, even the Amoraim grappled with, sometimes we're doing the right thing, but our minds are elsewhere, Davian on autopilot. It's an old issue. It's something that we grapple with as well. Jews throughout the generations have grappled with. Yirmiyahu HaNavi is talking about it. And one of the things, one of the tools in our arsenal is to begin to learn, to begin to think, even better on a regular basis, about the reasons for why we do things. Even if we're learning specific mitzvahs, and we're going to see specific ideas, but it's also, bichlal, going to awaken our minds, get ourselves more in the zone of thinking about mitzvahs. And I want to start with a mitzvah or two from last week's parsha. The parshios in Vaschanan, Ekev, Re'eh are very, very rich with mitzvahs. We're going to have a hard time picking which mitzvahs we're doing. There are a fair number of mitzvahs in Maaseh also, which we're going to get to at least some of later in the week. I actually want to start with one or two mitzvahs from Parshas Pinchas. Take a look inside, mitzvah top. Take questions, I'll be glad to take questions later. But right now, take a look inside. You see, he tells you, since it's Sefer HaChinuch, as Dov pointed out before, is arranged al Seder HaParshos, so there are Parshos with no mitzvahs, and there are Parshos with mitzvahs. As you see on the page, Parshas Balak, Seder by Yar Balak, the Seder, we call it Parsha, but the Rishonim usually refer to it as a Seder. Parsha, technically speaking, is a paragraph in the Sefer Torah. What you lay, the weekly portion, quote-unquote, we call it the Parsha, Parshas Pinchas, Parshas Balak, but the language of the Rishonim usually, especially the Ramban, and Sefer Chinuch was Mitalmidei Ramban, will call it a Seder, or a Sedra, Bimavra Sedra. The Seder Vayar Balak Ein Bal Mitzvah, the Pinchas, six mitzvahs I say. Here is the first one. And this first mitzvah, you might be wondering, why on earth is Cohen deciding we're going to introduce you to Sefer HaChinuch, what seems like such a technical, dry, and even sad mitzvah. Mitzvah 400, certainly a round number. Dine Nachlos. Who here has learned Bava Basra? Any hands? Has learned Bava Basra? Just our Shalom Eshu. Mishnais. A long time ago. So the 8th and to extent the 9th prakim of Bava Basra deal with a din that appears in one of the parshios in Seder Pinchas. Unless you got the wrong sheet. Nitzkavinu b'dini nachlos. The Torah tells us the halachos of inheritance. Shemitzvah aleinu lasos v'ladun. B'inyani ha'nachla right over here. K'kasher dana Torah. We have to carry out, we have to implement the rules that the Torah has for inheritance. Shenemar, so that we learned yesterday. Ish kiyamos, a man passes away. This is fundamentally a sad part of halacha. Inheritance is what happens when you have a person who owns property. Almost everyone owns something. Fellow passes away, so now who owns it? During a person's lifetime, if you own property, you own real estate, you own a bike, you own a car, you own a phone, you own artwork, you own a pen, whatever it is, once you own something, maybe some of you have learned Bav Mitzir, maybe some of you have learned Masechet Kiddushin, you know a thing or two about Kinyanim, so somehow an item became yours, whatever it is, Matatl and Karka, once it's yours, it stays yours, unless you choose, with your Das Machne, and with a Maisa Kinyan, you choose to be Machne, to sell it, to gift it, whatever it is, to someone else. But things, once they're yours, they stay yours unless you choose to hand them over. Unless you choose to convey them to someone else. But what happens when a person passes away? What happens when a person passes away? So now what happens? Mishnah Paragraphs reminds us, you don't take your physical assets with you to Olam Haba. Once you pass away, it's not yours. What happens? Oh, so Pesukim say, yesterday's lightning, Yerusha. And to whom does the Yerusha go? Who inherits the assets of the person who passed away? Ishki amustu vein law, right over here. So Pasuk says, if he has sons, it goes to his sons. Otherwise, it goes to daughters. Otherwise, it goes to brothers. Otherwise, it goes to uncles. The Pesukim work out the whole family tree, and then the Bidrashas of Pesukim see more of a family tree. If a person passes away, they're going to be a designated person or people who become the new owners of those assets. That is called inheritance. That is called Yerusha or Nachla. The Sofa Parsha, and what's the pasuk at the end of that Parsha, end of that paragraph? This is the mitzvah Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe. Tziva, mitzvah, means mitzvah doros. I mean, even though it's originally formulated in the context of whom, remember the story was the five daughters of Tzofchad. It's a very particular episode that was the frame for this mitzvah. That's why the Sefer HaChinuch is pointing out. But at the end of the Psukim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Moshe Rabbeinu a nevuah about this, he stresses that this is a permanent mitzvah. This wasn't just the Harosh Hashem in the Midbar. This is a permanent mitzvah. Therefore, it belongs to the list of the 613 permanent mitzvahs d'oraisa. Okay. So you're looking at me and saying, okay, I guess this is important. I don't know everyone's backstory, but hopefully this is very far from your present experience. So, okay, it's a din. I guess it's important. Again, we have to have this din. But this is how you start an exploration of a Machshava Sefer. Turn the page, please. I remember I told you, Dibur Chinuch always has four parts. He'll deal with a basic definition, which is usually only a paragraph, although here it's actually three paragraphs. One, two, and three, we're skipping the rest of his, or four paragraphs, skipping the rest of his expansive discussion of what the mitzvah is exactly. We're going to skip part three and four, which is a very expansive discussion of the dinim and the, who it applies to and the stats of the mitzvah. Let's zero in on the bottom page, Kuf Yotet. See that opening phrase, the second to last paragraph, Dibra Maschel Misharoshe HaMitzvah. See, the last paragraph on the page is Midine HaMitzvah. That always introduces section three. Let me give you a flavor, a taste of the, some of the dinim. But we're going to focus on the Sharoshe HaMitzvah. Most mitzvahs that we're going to learn will be focused on the Sharoshim. Every once in a while, we're going to look at the mitzvah as a whole. What are some of the Sharoshim of the mitzvah? Seems so technical. Do you ever even ask yourself that question? What's the idea behind Nachla? How does Nachla change me as a Jew? How does it shape my midos? How does it shape my hashkafa? Oh, I wouldn't think it does. It's whatever. It's a rule. We've got to have a rule. Take a look. Fascinating. Sefer Chinuch has a totally, total paradigm shift. Kidei sheyeda ad nevi yisbonei. Ki ha'oi. Through having the mitzvah, dinam of Nachla, it gets you thinking. I wouldn't even thought it gets me thinking, to be misbonein. Ladas is to know. You know. How many people here have learned Mesilas Yesharim in the past? Or at least seen the inside of Mesilas Yesharim? You get to Perek Gimel? Okay. Perek Hay? Okay. So the maybe at some point we'll have a chance to re-meet the author of Mesilas Yesharim, a fascinating life, absolutely. If you thought he was an old man, if Musar Sefer makes you think of an old man with a long white beard who's very otherworldly, then Ramchal was none of those things. But that's a story. He was a young, cliché-shaven fellow who got kicked across Europe because he was so controversial, who was teaching Kabbalah to a bunch of medical students in Padua. That's a story for a different time. But Lehisbonain is a word that the Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal uses often Mesilas Yesharim. It means to stop and think. Some things that we often don't do. It's not just because of cell phones, which we may have heard in Moshe Shmuz. People have been grappling with the need to stop and think for thousands of years. But to actually stop and just to stop moving and stop doing and just carve out time to think about an idea. It gets you thinking. What does Nachla get you thinking about other than dollars and cents? He says just the opposite. Ki ha'olam biyad adon mashkiach al kobri yosav. He said, you know what thinking about Nachla gets you to? The world, there's a master of the universe who's an adon of the whole universe, who's mashkiach on you. That's already like a chapter of profound hashkafa in one sentence. To recognize the paradox that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the entire universe, the CEO, the biggest boss, there's an article in the journal yesterday about the face-off, if you care about these things, the face-off between two of the biggest CEOs in the tech world, Zuckerberg and Musk, and there was this whole back and forth about a cage match, and now they're taking each other on in terms of Twitter versus Threads. I recommend that you be a part of neither, but that's a conversation for a different time. But it's fascinating to see, you know, the egos of people, very, very bright, strategic people, what happens when they're in conflict. And these are people, a guy gets up and says, my goal is to have 1 billion human beings having digital conversation on my app, through my companies. Wow, that's a madriga. That's nothing compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who actually is the master of the universe. Do you think that Mark Zuckerberg, if you've made the unfortunate decision to be on Instagram or Facebook or Threads, do you think Mark Zuckerberg cares about you personally? Very unlikely. Unless you really have very extreme views about privacy, he's not actually tracking you. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's running a universe with billions of people and quadrillions of other creatures, is taking care of not just the people who are self-styled influencers. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes a personal interest in you and you and you and you, regardless of what other people think. It's already in that first line, the Adon, the master of the universe, is mashgiach on, takes a personal interest in everyone. Ayu maisei tzvi, what does that have to do with, that's nice, emunah, what does that have to do with nachala? Because if I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the decision that I should have assets, God, I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the decision that I should be at a certain place at a certain time, that I should own certain things, if we believe that there was efforts are amoeba, results are on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ubritzono the Cheftzo HaTov, Zochikol Echa the Echa the Bnei HaOlam, Bechelek HaNachasim Shum HaSig BaOlamo. Whatever I own, it's by the decision of the Ribbono Shel Olam that I own that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made decisions about my life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is managing my life. I have the opportunity to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's junior partner in crafting my destiny and my future. What I own is ultimately by the design of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'matanaso Baruch Hu mevareches. So his gift to me is blessed. Shetimashech le'olam she'idnalo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me something. That matters. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me assets. That was a divine decision. It's a divine decision that I have the house that I have. It was a divine decision to have the car that I have. It was a divine decision to have the parents that I have. Not a monetary asset.
It's a divine decision to have the Instagram account I have, too.
Perhaps. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you Bechir HaKashas. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you freedom to make decisions. Absolutely. Matanasa Baruch Hu Mevareches. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me something. It's going to continue. The Sefer Chinuch writes that what seems like such a technical din of nachala, whatever, a guy, it's sad, it's technical, a guy passes away, and all of a sudden, great decision, and all of a sudden, we have to figure out who owns his assets. It's far more than just technicalities. It is far more than just technicalities. This is an opportunity for me to realize that what seems like something so mundane, what my possessions are, that was a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me that gift, that means it's an opportunity to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu choosing that I should succeed or whatever I succeed at and own the things I own, that was a divine decision that matters. That was a divine decision that's going to last. If it was a bracha for me, it's going to most likely be a bracha, either, as he goes on to say, for the people upon whom I had a hashpa, children and grandchildren, or the people who likely had a hashpa on me and helped shape me to be the sort of person that was acting in a way that was zocha to the gifts that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me. So what seems like such a technical, whatever, okay, something that has to be done, has to be taken care of, is in fact, to a thinking Jew, inheritance is an opportunity to refresh and deepen my sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in the details of my life. And the footnotes in the bottom, they quote the Rambam, the Mor Nevuchim took a different approach. It has to do with a different relationship. And he says that the Nachala is an opportunity to re-strengthen the bonds of family. And the Rambam waxes poetic in footnote Vav about how family relationships are a key. Investing in family relationships is a key halachic value. And this is, and if this sounds sort of out there, that inheritance, which only happens at the end of a person's life, somehow impacts and strengthens family relationships, if it matters to you, sociologists over the last 20 years or so have rediscovered the truth that the Rambam posited almost 1,000 years ago, that the reality of inheritance does tend to, in the long run, strengthen family relationships in a culture. One hopes that family relationships are healthy. Every relationship always uses a little bit of extra work. But one hopes that family relationships are generally healthy. Sometimes relationships are more complex. And in fact, when relationships are very, very complicated, when relationships are exceptionally complicated, sometimes tragically, it erupts over inheritance. If you've heard stories of families fracturing over inheritance, it's the flip side of the coin. Flip side of the coin that the halachas of inheritance re-strengthen family bonds. There's a lot more to say about this, but let's take a step back for a moment. And what just happened was two things. Number one, we had a chance to think about specifics of Hashkaf a little bit, to begin to think about the whoever thought of how to what extent have we thought about family relationships as a halachic value. Yeah, we thought about kibbutz avim a little bit here and there. We thought about chinuch a little bit here and there, but to reflect that, and certainly, and we came across, we certainly thought about emunah to some extent. How much have we thought about the fact that every single time we say a bracha, and I say Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, I'm rephrasing the paradox of, if you like terminology, transcendence and immanence, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is out there running the whole world, and he's also, on a micro level, managing my life. He's Melech Olam, but he's also Hashem Elokeinu, which the Rambam, which the Sefer Chinuch captured over here. There's an Adon, who's Mashkiach Rabbi Yosef, and that somehow is being reinforced by Nachla. So we had a chance to very briefly touch on a couple of Yesodos of Emuna and Yesodos of Hashkafas HaTorah. We also had a chance to begin to get a lick of seeing how so often what looks like a technical mitzvah, when you start pulling on the thread, you see brings you to major Yesodos in thinking. Unlocked by seeking to live meaningfully. Unlocked by seeking to not just go with the flow and do the things you're supposed to do, which is already in Madrega, but once I start thinking about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, once it's not just I have to do this, I can't do that, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to not do that, all of a sudden it opens up a new vista on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations and the values that lie behind it.